We made this.
Welcome back to the X-Cast. The truth is in here. I'm Special Agent Sarah Blair, coming to you from the archives, located deep within the X-Cast basement. As our assistant director, Tony Black, has tasked us with digging out some case files to revisit, I brought down my own Tofurdy Rice Dreamsicle and got to work browsing some of my favorite episodes, and I came across this little gem. When AD Black first proposed the idea of doing Fight the Future Minute, I thought he was batshit banana pants. Watch Fight the Future movie and do one episode per minute? What would we even talk about? It was a massive undertaking that required enormous coordination, cooperation, and I won't even go into how many versions of the film there are and how each one has a slightly different timestamp. From a production standpoint, we may as well have coordinated a worldwide strike against alien invaders using nothing but Morse code. But we pulled it off, and it was so fun. A summer event to last the ages. If you haven't yet listened to Fight the Future Minute in its entirety, I highly recommend you start from the beginning. It absolutely fits my criteria of re-listenable content. As it is, I had to choose one episode to bring out of the archives, so I chose the one hosted by Carl Sweeney with guest Katie Doe. It's Fight the Future Minute 28. That about does it, spooky. This was one of the episodes that required a little creativity to fill out, and you might wind up learning a thing or two you never knew about cocktails. I hope you'll go back and listen to the entire Fight the Future Minute, but for now, please enjoy Minute 28 with Carl and Katie.
Welcome back to the X-Cast. As ever, the truth is in here. And thank you very much for joining us for this. This is our special Fight the Future Minute podcast, where we're going through the Fight the Future film 1 minute at a time, which is kind of insane when you think about it. I'm Carl Sweeney, your host for today, and this is our coverage of minute 28 of the film, which begins on 27 minutes, 0 seconds, with Mulder continuing the monologue that he began last time out when he was talking to the barmaid, played by Glenn Headley. And this minute ends when he's just settled his bill, I think. And to discuss this minute, I'm joined once again by Katie Doe. Katie, how's it going?
Hi, Carl. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. Whereabouts in the US are you? Which part of the country?
I'm in Massachusetts, so the western part.
So help me out. Which X-Files episodes are set in Massachusetts, if any?
Oh, there are some real good... Teso dos Bichos is in Boston.
Wow, claim to fame.
Let's see. Yeah. Medusa is in Boston. There aren't too many out this way. I know there's a few more. I just don't know off the top of my head.
Well, that's kind of interesting. Killer Cats and Medusa, that's a subway, isn't it?
I think Genderbender might be. It's either that or New Hampshire. I'm not sure which one it is.
All right. So, yeah, so we discussed Mulder in the bar. So he's doing a bit of solo drinking. He's kind of at a bit of a crossroads. And he started to talk, didn't he? He started to talk to the barmaid. He started to open up. I mean, did you think there was something... I guess it's just the fact that he's been drinking, but he's quite cavalier with what he says, really, isn't he? Would he normally be so upfront about, hey, there's this big conspiracy and, you know...
I don't think so. I think he's just exasperated and also drunk, and he thinks, you know, no one's listening to him anymore. I think he just doesn't really care.
And, you know, of course, she doesn't take any heed of it, of course. She probably hears a lot of stuff in that job. I mean, have you ever worked in the bar? I've never worked in the bar, but I imagine you must hear kind of all sorts.
Oh, I would think so, yeah.
Yeah. All right, so I'll tell you what, I'll read out the end of what Mulder says, and then I guess we can take it from there. So he says, and this is off the back of what he said last time, he says, "So, of course, no one believes me. I'm an annoyance to my superiors, a joke to my peers. They call me Spooky. Spooky Mulder, whose sister was abducted by aliens when he was just a kid, and who now chases after little green men with a badge and a gun, shouting to the heavens or to anyone who will listen that the fix is in, that the sky is falling, and when it hits, it's going to be the shitstorm of all time." So yeah, what did you make of that? Anything particularly grab you about what he said? Like anything you thought was especially interesting?
I thought he probably enjoyed saying shit for the first time. Couldn't say that on TV.
That's, I was going to ask you about that, yeah, because there are a couple of, probably a few, you know, curse words in the film. And again, like you say, they couldn't get away with that on TV. I mean, do you find that, like, jarring at all?
It's kind of odd. You're just not used to it, but,
yeah,
you know, it kind of, it fits with what he's kind of spewing out.
And I suppose they keep it relatively mild, don't they?
They do.
I mean, it's not like he's running around calling the Smoky Man like a motherfucker.
Or anything, no. or
anything, you know? So, yeah, okay, I would agree on that. It's always fun to hear him called Spooky, isn't it? I mean, here he, you know, uses the term about himself, but I think that's a nickname that kind of seemed to go away during the series. I like when they resurrect it.
We don't really hear it very often after the first couple seasons. And it's probably one thing that, you know, a lot of kind of real casual fans knew about the show. He's called Spooky, so they had to kind of work that in there.
So this, as we said earlier, you said, well, we said this was shot in a bar in downtown LA, and we were pleased to discover it's still there, Casey's Bar. On the commentary, again, Chris Carter talks about the need to be quite truthful to the show, whilst also telling a big sci-fi story. So I guess we just kind of accept it now, but I guess at one point they probably had a choice, didn't they? Like, do we do a big mythology story for the first film, or do we do kind of a monster of the week?
Mm-hmm.
We can start generally, like on that kind of debate, how fond of you are of the mythology versus Monster of the Week? Like what are you really drawn to?
I mean, there's always some really good mythology stories, but I think I probably tend to gravitate more towards those and also kind of the more character driven Monster of the Weeks, as opposed to kind of this, the general, you know, here's a monster, we have to go chase it. So I'm definitely a myth arc fan.
And I suppose, and like we said last time, they kind of had to catch people up who were coming to the cinema, or the theatre, as you guys would say. They had to kind of catch people up who didn't really know the premise of the show. And I guess that's probably a bit harder to do, isn't it, with a mythology? Like, that probably means you have to do these scenes where they kind of serve as a bit of a catch-up. They might have given themselves an easier time if they'd done some kind of big Monster of the Week, I guess.
I think so, but I think you'd still need to get background on the characters and...
Yeah.
There'd be a little bit still involved.
So what I took from this scene was like 86 refers to how much Mulder's bar tab is, yeah?
No. When you 86 someone, you toss them out of the bar. Like you're 86, oh. You're done. Yeah.
Oh, where does that come from then? Do we know what that refers to?
I actually don't know. I'd have to look it up.
Right, because I'd spent like way too much time trying to figure out how many drinks he'd had.
Oh, that was very expensive whiskey.
To rack up an $86 bill, yeah. Okay, to 86 someone. So when else would you use that? Like, so just in a bar situation?
I've kind of only heard it, yeah, like if someone's being real rowdy, like the bouncer, like, you know, they're 86'd, they're done.
Got, yeah, right. Yeah. Well, that's if I learn nothing else through these podcasts, it's that. I wonder if I'm the only one who doesn't know that. That's interesting. Let us know, listeners, if you were confused like me.
Yeah, it's not used very often now, I don't think, but yeah.
Cool. What do you think Mulder was kind of... Because he says, like, one is the loneliest number. I didn't quite know what he was driving at there. Was he just referring to the fact that... I don't know. He wasn't kind of coming onto the barmaid, was he? Why do you think he said that?
I figured it was just sort of a tie-in to the soundtrack, because that's one of the songs that's on the soundtrack.
Is that the Amy Mann song? Is that...
No, it's by Filter. It's a Three Dog Night song. But okay. Filter re-recorded it for this. It's not in the movie. It's just on the soundtrack.
Do you know what? I don't think I've listened to the soundtrack in a long, long time.
It's okay. Yeah, there's a lot of things that aren't in the movie. It's like, you know, just famous groups got together and just recorded appropriate songs, I guess.
Do you think they are appropriate? Do you think it's a good soundtrack?
Yeah, it's real. It's moody and it's, yeah, I like it. I used to listen to it a lot when I first got it back in the day.
Okay, so was there anything else that kind of grabbed you about this minute? Anything else that kind of jumped out at you?
I like the facial expressions of both Mulder and the barmaid and, you know, the looks back and forth when he finishes talking. Like, she really just doesn't know what to say for a minute.
They have very good comic timing as well, don't they?
Yeah, it's a really good scene. You know, short, but, you know, between two actors. I liked it a lot.
All right. Well, I thought we could finish up in the bar. We can continue with our amazing facts about bartending that we started last time out.
So sounds good.
Does the phrase shake up a penguin mean anything to you?
It does not, no.
All right. So apparently, the first cocktail shakers were actually shaped like penguins.
Really?
Don't know why. I don't have any other context for that.
That's adorable.
All right, margaritas. Okay. How many margaritas do you... Well, this can't be right. This looks really wrong, this number. But anyway, Katie, how many margaritas would you estimate are drunk every single hour in America?
Every single hour? Oh, I have no idea. I don't know. Are we in like? Are we in the hundreds of thousands? Thousands?
We apparently we are. We're in the hundreds of thousands.
Really? Wow, that's a lot of happy hours going on.
This number looks wrong to me. Again, this is from barschool.net, so I'm hoping they know. This is the European Bartender School, apparently. They think that 185,000 margaritas are drunk every single hour in the USA, which makes it the most popular cocktail in America.
Wow.
I can't even conceive of how that is possible.
No.
But I suppose it's a big country, isn't it? So maybe. All right, let's see what else we got here. Right, now I'm not clear on what country this refers to, but this is interesting. If you want to advertise your new cocktail or spirit, you're not allowed to call it refreshing. The word is banned when talking about anything alcoholic.
Oh, interesting.
That's, yeah, I don't know if that refers to America or where, but that, yeah, that makes sense, I guess. I guess you don't want to glamorize it too much.
Yeah, you're not trying to, you know, lure in the wrong people, you know, with a refreshing drink, children and such.
Yeah. Do you know, right, we've just got a couple more. Do you know what the national drink of Puerto Rico is?
Puerto Rico.
And I can give you a hint. If you like getting caught in the rain, you'll love this one.
Oh, it's a pina colada? I was going to say a Cuba Libre. So, okay, pina colada.
It's a pina colada, yep.
Interesting.
Cool. Yep. Right. I've got the reasoning here for why Jack Daniels comes in a square bottle. Apparently, the square bottles don't roll about and smash when being transported. And they've been that way since 1895. So I guess that makes sense.
That does make sense.
Yep. And finally for today, I think we've had more than enough. But how many bubbles would you estimate are in every bottle of champagne?
Oh, a million bubbles, we'll say.
Okay, you're actually significantly out. It's 49 million bubbles, apparently.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, that's a hell of a lot of bubbles.
Wow.
Each bottle has three times more pressure than a car tire. So wow.
Be careful around champagne bottles.
Yeah. And, well, there we go. Those are some of the most interesting facts about cocktails and bartending. So if anyone wants this link, let me know, and I'll provide it on Twitter.
I learned some things. That's good.
Yeah, really cool. All right, Katie. So you will be back with me for minute 29 is next, isn't it? Yeah. 29 follows 28, logically. So, yeah. And it's going to be fun, isn't it? Because we get outside the bar next time. And we get our first meaningful interaction, I guess, with Kurzweil, don't we?
We do.
Yeah, so I'm really looking forward to that. We'll be back, listeners, very soon on Fight the Future Minute. Hope you can join us again. I really hope people are enjoying these podcasts so far. And we're only getting started, really. There's still a long, long way to go. So until our next minute, listeners, remember, as always, trust no one.
Previously on the We Made This Network. Free with this month's issue.
And also, I wonder if Tim Harrington and Colin have been in the same room together.
I've still got slightly more hair.
Like, you go onto the Wikipedia page, and for a moment I thought Colin was wearing a multicoloured feather jacket.
I am. Yeah, I am.
Yeah. If you were on a Skype call, you'd see that.
But, I'm not in Les Savvy Fan.
Cinemortuary.
Yeah, a lot of interesting things with that mechanic, couldn't you? I'm sure the sequels probably play into it. Like, if it's not your turn to die, people just jump out of planes and shit and they're fine.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. Yeah, that'd be a good one.
But again, as a character, would you risk that in case it was your turn? In case there's like some information you didn't know about, someone else has been saved, therefore it's your go now.
I mean, if I knew it were going to come eventually, I would absolutely get some knuckle dusters on and fight my way into the White House just with my fist. Just like, I mean, if you're going to go out anyway, just like man in polo neck charges into White House, takes down 300 Secret Service, shits on Donald Trump's face, and kills him by slamming his head in a drawer.
Life's milestones.
So, what do you think? Are we going to go with compostable, Chris?
I like that as an idea. Oh, there's the Hunter S. Thompson firework idea I quite like as well.
What's that?
Yeah, these ashes loaded into a rocket and just shot up in it as a firework.
Amazing.
Whether that's true or not, that's the legend has it. Anyway.
Well, you get quite a lot of ashes. You could have a firework.
You could then
have some thrown into your garden, or you could then have some in a necklace for somebody else. But you get a lot of ashes, and you don't need a lot of ashes to make...
It's a weird thing. I don't know if I know anyone who's been cremated and then had the ashes. I must do, but I can't imagine having someone's ashes in the house. That feels faintly creepy. I would follow various kind of dog forums on Facebook, and you can get dog ashes. And
I've got my cat's ashes. I've got cat ashes on the mantelpiece.
I can somehow see that more than a fellow human.
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This podcast network.
...100 years since Nosferatu first terrified audiences on the big screen.
30 years since Francis Ford Coppola gave us Bram Stoker's Dracula.
And, 10 years since Dark Shadows of Johnny Depp.
Vampire Videos is a podcast taking a look at this iconic blood-sucking monster on film and television.
I'm Dan Owen.
And I'm Hugh McStay.
And we're here to guide you through a century of vampirism on film. From Hollywood's golden age with Bela Lugosi as Count Dracula...
...to the more lurid Hammer horrors of the 60s and 70s starring Peter Cushing and Christopher Lee.
Through to the 80s boom in vampires, which brought these creatures of the night into the modern age.
And everything this century's had to offer us, from foreign and independent films, spoof comedies, and even teenage love stories... Yes, I'm talking about Twilight.
We aim to cover it all, one bite at a time.
So join us on a voyage into the depths of vampire cinema, old and new, with weekly guests offering their own insights and expertise. And why not follow us on Twitter, at Vamp Videos.
A proud part of the We Made This podcast network, subscribe now to Vampire Videos, and thanks for listening.